Hey, this is Ashley from Smoker Builder. You're listening to the Smoker Builder podcast.
I guess my question to you guys is, what's your you got any food plans for the big game weekend? I know I'd have my video, but curious to see what anybody in the chat's doing as far as plans for a Super Bowl weekend. I'm sure lots of barbecue will be going on this weekend. So
it's good. What you doing, Richard? You doing anything?
Yeah, same old same, man. Just grilling and chilling here at the house, and probably definitely having some cold ones. That's more than likely it. I'm not sure yet to what, but probably though I'll see some fajitas more than likely, and some sausage, and I might even get some those pork steaks and throw some on there as well. But usually my two fajitas and sausage is just an easy, fast thing to do, and they usually come out pretty good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I got to make some kind of nachos or something like that. I don't have nothing set yet, but my daughter usually, especially like we'll pull. I don't really have a specific team that I'll go for, but I'm going for the Chiefs in this one.
Okay.
But, I know I'll probably get hate for that, but I mean, I like the 49ers, but I've enjoyed watching Patrick Mahomes play. He's a special quarterback to me, but she'll usually do some kind of little finger foods. It's almost like a Christmas sort of hors d'oeuvres, that sort of thing, meatballs, that kind of stuff. But I don't know what happened this year. We'll figure it out.
It's a good day to snack on stuff. So, yeah, it's hard to make one big meal.
Yeah. Matt, let's see, he said he's going to be no plans. He'll be traveling. He's going to have his first big cook on the 55s yesterday, did some beef ribs. Yeah,
beef ribs is always good. It's a good choice for a first cook. That's a solid choice too.
that's why I've never cooked beef ribs.
Yeah,
some of these things we never hear about in Georgia. We're like secluded from everybody. Never heard of pork steak. Never. I didn't know nothing about beef ribs. I mean, it took a little while after learning even about brisket. I didn't have brisket until about 7 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Never had it or anything, but.
Now I'm curious if Matt cooked like beef plate or like a beef back rib, but I'm guessing it's like the beef plate, like the big dino bones kind of stuff, but maybe not. I find that those are my favorite compared to like a beef back rib, which is a lot fattier, kind of thinner type cut.
Now, where are you located?
Me? I'm in Illinois. So basically central Illinois. If you guys know the University of Illinois, I'm like miles from it. So,
okay. He said he did right short ribs.
Okay. That's great.
What's the deal with your RC or remote control stuff that you were into like for years? I kind of stalked you on Facebook a little bit, and I was like, man, he really got into that stuff pretty heavy.
So the story there is I've always been a part of the RC community. I work for a company called Horizon Hobby. It's my full-time job. I'm the brand marketing director over there, and I manage a portfolio of brands with a team of guys. That's all of our aircraft, so aircraft and helicopters, and also our radio systems, as well as some of our batteries and chargers and whatnot. I've been in the hobby, in the RC hobby, since I was probably 12 or 13. I started out racing RC cars and then kind of progressed myself, worked for a couple hobby shops, taught myself how to fly, and then just stayed with the hobby, and then went to school for marketing, came out of school, went directly to work for an e-commerce business that sells radio control products called AtlantaHobby.com. I lived down in Georgia for a while, and actually I grew up in Georgia pretty much from middle school through college. And I worked there. Then I met with Horizon Hobby, who is my current employer. It was 12 plus years ago now, and kind of worked my way up the chain in that organization. And so, yeah, right now I'm full on RC. Pretty much anytime you see me not doing barbecue, it's either RC or working. So, and working in RC. So it's a fun job. It's a fun hobby. It's cool to be able to do this. Definitely between barbecue and radio control products, that's kind of my two passions in life. Maybe motorcycling as a third, but I've always been a part of that. So that's kind of, if you see my Facebook feed, it's typically me personally, it's typically my RC stuff, just because I've built up a notoriety within that industry. And then I started up my barbecue channel kind of not terribly long ago, I'd say last year sometime, and been trying to build that up as fast as possible. So it's really a creative outlet for me. I also have an RC channel called Steve's RC.
Oh,
I think it's like 3,500 subscribers or something. where I just do reviews and whatnot of our products. But yeah, it's just a, to me, YouTube has always been a kind of just a creative outlet. I went from being someone who was always on camera at work to someone who now leads a team of people who are strategists and marketers. And so I don't get that on screen fun time anymore. And so I kind of have to do it another way. So I get this kind of creative outlet with doing videos for my Smoke and Meats YouTube channel or even my Steve's RC YouTube channel. So yeah, it's just a fun way to kind of express yourself in a different light for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had a channel on that. Let's check that one out. That sounds pretty. You get, what's the fastest car you've ever driven?
Ever like, driven?
I was all into those. The little RC
yeah,
car.
The, there's a car that we've got now that out of the box is like, is I think it's an easy 80 miles an hour out of the box, which I've driven that. That's a missile. I mean, something that weighs 8-9 pounds that's, you know, 20 inches long doing 80 miles an hour is a missile. I've driven stuff faster. I think the fastest car I've driven is 125, and it's scary. It's frightening to drive something like that because one wrong pebble in the way can cause a problem. Yeah, so
those drone races that I saw a lot of I guess once you start getting into your channel, you start opening up other things, and now those drones are like, that's crazy how they wear. I guess they wear those little goggles.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I guess. I mean, those things are really hauling ass. How can they see? I mean, that fast to go through the circles and squares and stuff like that.
I have one near me. So basically, it's a camera on board a very small drone that obviously is really high powered. And basically, you have a field of view. If you put the goggles on, you have a full field of view of what's in front of the aircraft. And it's typically a little wider than your peripheral in real life. So it's maybe a little, 290 degree peripheral, but you've got a pretty wide angle lens. You just send it, and it's all about muscle memory and flying capability, and really where you point, is where you fly. So wherever that camera's pointing is the direction you're going to be going, and the more throttle you add, the faster you go. And right now, I mean, I used to compete at drone racing, and I actually got into wing racing, which is airplanes with cameras on them. And we're doing 150 miles an hour full out all the time. We jokingly joined the nationals for wing racing in New York City. They don't do this anymore. It was in New York. It was on whatever the island that's adjacent to the Statue of Liberty. Anyway, we raced on this island, and we jokingly got fourth and fifth place, which entered us into the worlds. And so my buddy and I, who have the full resources of this global organization behind us, decided to build the fastest possible airplanes. So it's imagine an F1 team coming in and funding a project against a bunch of privateers. That's basically how we walked into the worlds. So we swept the worlds, first and second place, and that was down in Hawaii. So we got really, really kind of excited about that. And my drone racing career is far, far over, and it's really competitive sport. It's really what you see on ESPN is definitely competitive, but the guys that are racing at a lower level than like what you see on ESPN is even more mind-boggling. It's unreal how fast they can go through a course. Pretty cool. But anyway, that's that. You guys are here to talk barbecue, but yeah, that's the RC world is as crazy as you want. Just like any hobby, you can spend as little or as much as you want. And you can buy a $50,000 jet or a $50 RC car. So it's just kind of crazy.
Mine goes all the way back when, I don't know if you remember Radio Shack, when they had I think it was called Tiger Paw or something like that. They had the little art, which they weren't going that fast, but I mean, they would move pretty good. Younger and stuff. I mean, speed, that was everything, but those are fun. How did you get into barbecue? What was your, was there a pivotal moment that was like, yeah, this is what I want?
I think it was always, I always enjoyed to cook. I grew up learning to cook through either my mom, my grandmother actually taught me a lot. Obviously, but neither of them were into true hardcore barbecue. I really got into barbecue probably a little after COVID. And honestly, that's probably what kicked it off for me and maybe a lot of people. I just started wanting to cook, fun stuff at the house. And I started out with a vertical smoker, you know, a propane fired vertical smoker, a Masterbuilt ThermoTemp XL, I think is what it was. Started out with that, started enjoying that, did a couple of big cooks for, you know, a couple of parties and whatnot, and really got great feedback. And the more you get feedback from people about, hey man, this food's really good, would you mind doing it again? You get better and better, and you get a lot of practice under your belt, and you start getting the confidence like, hey, maybe I could actually, you know, feed more than just my family. So yeah, I got into it that way. Then I bought a Masterbuilt Gravity Series 800 and started enjoying that. And then I ended up making what I feel is now a dumb decision, but I bought a Traeger Ironwood XL, one of the newer ones. Right. And I don't love that machine at all. So for you pellet guys out there, kudos, but I know in this group we're probably safe, but not my favorite purchase. But I keep it for just using it as an oven, frankly. And then I bought a Super 55 from Frank and kind of collaborated with him on that. And I've been loving that thing. It's been fantastic. But yeah, my barbecue journey has just been really just a matter of just wanting to do a different hobby. And part of it, frankly, was with my RC channel, I couldn't really monetize it. Not that I'm making any amount of money or anything on YouTube, to be fair. But I couldn't monetize it because I work within the organization, so I couldn't use affiliate links inside my own company. It was kind of a double dip scenario. And I thought to myself, what could I do that's creative and fun and different, and I could actually try to monetize and make something of it, make a brand of it. I'm a brand guy. That's my background. So I was like, oh, let's do this. And so I built the Smoke and Meats YouTube channel and just tried to really push hard on you know, finding a niche that people were willing to watch. And I built the channel, not that it's massive, you know, we just broke 1,000 subscribers a couple weeks ago, but I built it up primarily from not just recipes, but just like upgrades and mods and things that, you know, I'm a pretty technical guy with my RC background. So I figured out ways to upgrade and improve the Masterbuilt Gravity Series 800 in ways that people necessarily weren't doing. And it just kind of grew from that pretty heavily. So anyway, that's kind of long story short, that's the journey from my barbecue world.
Yeah. What would you say your go-to rub right now is?
Well, go-to. I think my go-to, what I use more often than not is, believe it or not, Two Gringos, Brisket Magic on a lot of stuff. But I sub that in with you know, obviously I've got a pepper cannon, which I don't know if you know what a pepper cannon is, but it's like a wildly overly expensive pepper grinder. I received it as a gift unbelievably, and that, and so I use obviously pepper and salt, and then substitute some Brisket Magic, and then if I'm not using that, I use a lot of Meat Church products, and then recently got the Big Salinas stuff, so I'm trying that out, so excited to play with that. Use the barbecue sauce in the last video I did this weekend. But yeah, that's probably where I'm at right now. I'm trying to think what else I use that's around the house. But I've started making my own stuff too, you know. I think as you get into barbecue, you start going, I can make this probably a lot cheaper and maybe just exactly how I want it. So I've built up my own kind of SPG mix that I like, and I'm starting to play with other rubs and getting into
it. Now, do you have rubs and that sort of thing. A sauce type guy, or?
You know, I don't, yeah, sauces are, I've not found something that I just am in love with. I will say, I'm not just saying it because I got it from winning the thing, but I really did like the Big Salinas barbecue sauce. I really enjoyed that on the pork belly I made this weekend. And I guess I'm not just saying that because I want it. I actually genuinely think it's a good product. I've been using a lot of the Meat Mitch type stuff as well. His white sauce and just the regular barbecue sauce is pretty good from Meat Mitch. And I've used some of the Traeger stuff, but again, not a huge fan there. I feel like that's just so mass produced. It's not craft barbecue. But yeah, that's I'm not a huge sauce guy. I use it on ribs to glaze, and I don't really use it in a lot of other capacities. Maybe if I'm doing like a lollipop chicken or something like that, where you're trying to get a cool look on it.
Yeah.
Not a huge sauce guy.
Do you feed any Franklin stuff? Franklin's barbecue rubs or barbecue sauces? It seems like that's like something that they're starting to carry a lot at the grocery store around here.
And I'm not.
Barbecue sauces are pretty, they're really good actually.
Yeah, I'm sure they're fantastic. I have not seen them anywhere. I try to go to everywhere where it's like, you know, the Ace Hardware's here in Illinois are the best place to find various rubs and barbecue sauces. there's not like a great barbecue source in Illinois that I've found, in central Illinois anyway. I've been to like Cabela's and all the different kind of sporting goods stores. And even then I've never seen Franklin stuff. I'm sure it's in Illinois, but I just have not. Maybe it's not. Maybe yet the distribution hasn't reached it yet, but I've never seen it. I'm excited to try it now that you say that's good, but never seen it here. Yeah. I did order Goldie's rub one time from Goldie's just to try. The all purpose is in my opinion, you can easily reproduce it. It's a very kind of Lowry salt, pepper, garlic type of a feel. The brisket rub is pretty legit. It's pretty high salt content. So you have to be mindful of that. But when you watch some of the Jerby videos on how he seasons stuff, I think it's vastly different than how some other guys are doing. He's not hammering it like you would with a heavier pepper rub. Yeah. But it's also not bad when you just take a nice clean slice of brisket and you get that salt pop on the crust. If you do it right, it's not bad. But for me, I feel like I have to be careful with the level of salt that's in that, but I think it's a good rub for sure. But when it comes to brisket for me lately, I've not been using it only because it's like $16 a bottle. It's a ship it to earth, whatever it is. It's not cheap to ship it to your house from Goldie's, but I wanted to try it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hype, obviously. So I got one.
And do you still use that Weber grill that you had?
So I used the Smoky Mountain.
Yeah.
So I bought that right after I got my Super 55 when I was still finished building it. I found it on Marketplace for super cheap, and I was like, well, this is, you know, I want to try something different. And I see lots of guys. There's a huge following for the Smoky Mountain.
Yeah.
I like it. I actually keep it at my girlfriend's house right now, so it's kind of like the backup smoker. And so really I don't use it often. If I'm going to do drum style smoking, it's 100% going to be the Super 55. You know, the Smoky Mountain has its place. It's also a lot more portable, frankly. I mean, you can split it into three pieces. I can throw it in the bed of my truck and close the tonneau cover. And it's, you know, it's in there if I want to bring it somewhere. I actually brought that to Georgia for Christmas, and I did our prime rib on the Smoky Mountain because it was the only thing I could fit in the truck amongst everything else I was bringing down there. But yeah, I use it a little bit, not as much as my other stuff. I mean, my number one and two product think smokers that I use the most are my Super 55 and my Masterbuilt Gravity Series. It's by far.
Yeah, and you like that one.
That's the one you've upgraded with several pieces, right? With the fiberboard or fireboard?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a Fireboard Pro drive in it, which is like a whatever $300-something board. But that board you can pull out and use for other things. I've upgraded. I've done a couple other things with that one. The mods market for that particular grill or smoker is crazy because Masterbuilt, I mean, effectively built it pretty shoddily, and so there's firebox mods and people spend all kind of money on it. And by all means, it's a great entry-level gravity smoker. If I had the money, and honestly, I got to talk to Frank eventually, but I want to build one. I want to build a gravity smoker. I love the style of a gravity smoker. I love the concept of it. I'd love to be able to build one. I don't really know how at all, but I would love to do it because I kind of got my spark in barbecue because of that grill. And so for me, Gravity Series is kind of a special place in my heart. I do feel like I get really good barbecue off my Super 55 too, but it is a difference. So I still would favor like brisket on my Super 55 all day every day. I think that's by far the best.
I've seen a lot of people really into the gravity thing. I want one too, for health reasons for me, but I mean, like you said, they're pretty simple, so that's
go ahead. Sorry, Richard.
What was the con that you had on that 800? Is what just a fan issue going out, or it's just not as accurate as what you want it to be with the fan settings or the temperature settings or what?
It was a litany of things. So the first thing that people complain about first and foremost with that grill is there's three electrical sensors that effectively tell the board, it just closes the circuit, but it tells the board, hey, the hood is open, or hey, the ash door is open, or hey, the chimney door is open. And I think Masterbuilt built, I think the lawyers got involved, but I think they built that because if you don't have a sensor that shuts the fan off when you open the ash bin door, you get blasted with ash and fire. or if you open the chimney and you look down it and it lights up with a fan, you get blasted with fire. So I've completely taken all those out of mine and bypassed the switches, because you can just pause the fan, open the doors, or I'll leave them running. Be mindful that you could get hit with some hot ash as you open the doors. But those are right next to all these really hot heat sources. So if you know anything about electronics, they don't like water. They sure as hell don't like they don't like heat, and they don't like the mixture of heat, grease, and oil and everything else. So they end up failing. And so what happens is people, and I have one video that I'm not joking, you can see when people are smoking meat. Every weekend I get comments, "You saved my smoke, you saved me, you saved my ass." And it's because I made this video on how to like bypass in the middle of a cook, which is basically just shoving tinfoil in the electrical sensor to get it to connect. Anyway, people don't think about it. They just think, "Oh, my grill's not working. What's going on?" Because the fan shut off, and then you lose all your temperature, and it's basically failure. So anyway, that was one thing. And the fireboard kind of bypasses all that. And the fireboard versus a Masterbuilt stock fan unit controller obviously is leaps and bounds better. So the consistency of the temperature and all that is fantastic. But I've also done a vent mod on the back, and I've never done the stuff inside the firebox, but I guess they designed that smoker to, and it sounds crazy, but the firebox, so it's like a thin wall metal, but behind it is fire brick, like food safe fire brick. And so they designed it to basically erode effectively the firebox and go to fire brick. After like 100 cooks, it goes just to fire brick. You burn all that metal away. But people are like, why is this metal burning off into my smoker? Like, this can't be good. So anyway, that's a mod that guys will like stainless steel line this thing. But yeah, it's interesting. It's something I recommend for an entry level gravity smoker if you're into that. But there are better platforms on the market, but this is why I want to build one that's like a custom made one.
Just Frank asked, have you documented those mods on your YouTube channel?
So I've done a video like the top 10 upgrades for your Masterbuilt Gravity series. I've tried to document the Firebird mod, the bypass switches and all that. So I feel like I've covered most, even like the little vent on the back. It's definitely one of those, you know, I've tried to document it as best I could. And at some point, I think I just hit the brakes on spending money on it, because I'm like, this is getting kind of expensive. I will say, though, I was able to buy that at pretty inexpensive price. So I was at a Walmart one day, and I don't know where I was, randomly, and they had one out on display, and it was like half off. So it was already like 300 something bucks. And then my girlfriend walked up to the counter, and this was like late at night, it was like 10 o'clock. So it's like the graveyard shift. And she's like, "Hey, there's a grill out here. It's missing a few things. Could you guys do a better deal on it?" And they're like, "Yeah, we'll give you 50% off whatever's on the price." So I got this $800 smoker for 150 bucks. So I didn't feel bad about putting some money into it at the end of the day. Yeah. Now, and the guy that buys one at street value, then yeah, I get it. I'm a crazy person to that guy. But I did get it for a pretty good steal.
You said the name of your YouTube channel is Smoking Meats.
Yep.
And I know I found it when I started, you know, learning about the Super 55. One of your videos popped up, and it was the turkey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That one intrigued me, so, because I always would be like, could you cook a turkey in this thing? Because I don't see no videos out there on it. How did that turkey come out for you?
So that turkey came out great. We ate it for Thanksgiving. I just didn't finish the video because it turned into like a family day. So I just wanted to do kind of a, that was really the first major cook I did on the Super 55. So it was a total like, I hope this works out, you know. And I talked to Frank a bunch, and it got my confidence up. But it was by far, I mean, everybody loved it. And we killed that turkey. Everyone ate it, and it was a good time. I will say the only thing that I would do differently is just how I dressed it, how I dressed the skin, because I got a little darker look than I wanted at the end of the day. So I don't know if I have photos of it.
Did you run a lot of wood chunks in it or not really?
I think I did. I want to say I did that. So I followed Frank's method of, you know, filling up the ash bin or the charcoal bin and then doing a full hopper on top, a full Weber charcoal chimney on top. And then I think I added like 3 or 4. I want to say I use applewood chunks. And I typically use a lighter, fruitier wood for like chicken and poultry. Personally, I use hickory 99% of the time. It's what's around here. It's easier to find. Apple is a little more expensive, but I have an apple tree out in my backyard, which oftentimes I'll take wood from that and season it and hold it for a year. So I've got a whole rack of apple wood right now. But so I think I use a little bit of wood for sure. But I got a darker skin, and I think it was either just how I because you're cooking at a higher temperature. I think I'm not sure what rub I use now that I think about it, but whatever it had, it must have had like a higher sugar content in it, and it really kind of caramelized at the end there because you're running that up that 300 degrees or 325 on turkey. But that was just a learning curve. Again, it was my first one, but it came out great. Presentation wise, it was a little darker than I wanted, but by all means, it was delicious.
That made me excited. I was like, I'm gonna try one on one.
I'm looking back at all my photos now, see if I had a better shot of it that I didn't post. But yeah, it was spatchcock style turkey, man. It's the only way to go, in my opinion.
How long did it take you to cook it?
It was not long. It was like I think it was a 20-pound bird, and I did it in like 2.5 hours or so. It felt really quick. It may have been longer, but. It went real quick.
Once we get that secret part here coming out, we might be able to do it differently, but I've used them before, and man, you can put a lot more turkeys in one time inside the drum.
What
you talking about now?
Looking forward to that, right? But yeah, for what it is, it was. It fit the whole bird, but yeah, I'd love to be able to hang more in there.
You're gonna make a video on that one, Richard.
I can't find a picture. Oh well, I thought I had a picture of it, but apparently I don't.
How many can you fit in there?
I've got a video which I need to post, but it's kind of a ribs kickoff or ribs cook-off with all of the smokers that I own. So at the time it was the Smoky Mountain, the Super 55, the Gravity Series, and the Traeger. I think it was 4. Yeah. And it was interesting to see the different, I just did a rack of ribs, you know, pork ribs in each one. I had a buddy come over and try them at the end. And it was interesting to get obviously different feedback from different people. My girlfriend tried some, he tried some, and it was a cool video. I've got to post it. It's been in the edit train, just like my Super 55 build video is still being edited right now. But
how long have you had it now?
The Super 55? When was that, Frank? That was probably August. It was summertime. The video I'm editing right now is me sweating my ass off in the backyard building it. So it's got to be summertime. It was good.
That's all I need to know. Is the paint still pristine?
I'll say this. So the paint is in perfect shape for the most part. I dropped something on the lid and chipped it. That was my fault. But it was like I forget what it was, something heavy. And I was like, damn it. So I just touched it up. Mm-hmm. But the barrel itself is pretty good. The back beat that's not visible, it looks like the paint kind of lost a little bit of its sheen, but it's still in good shape. I think it was either how I painted it or what, but it's still in good shape. Nothing has bubbled or blistered or chipped or peeled. If you look at it, it looks beautiful. And I just added my logo to it with high temp vinyl. And I don't know if you guys can see that. But,
that's nice.
So it'll look really cool when it's.
I'm gonna tell you too, because yours
is funny, but yeah.
I know you had said that you were from, because I'm in Georgia. So I'm a Bulldog fan. So the color I had to really contemplate on doing that one, the red and the black.
Yeah. It's been good. The paint's been solid. So it's been happy with the paint. And nothing really gets, the barrel gets warm, but I don't think it's not to the point where it's going to fry paint. Now that paint that's on there is like a high temp paint, but it's not really. I guess it's technically kind of high temp, so it's fine. But yeah, I think if you Frank was the one that told me, he's like, don't worry, just put regular Rust-Oleum on the thing, it'll be fine. And he's not wrong.
I really meant more like, are you babying it, man? Like every time I get a piece of a dropping of grease on it, I'm over there wiping it off, and it's like you were saying, throwing it in the back of the truck. I don't think I would throw this in back of the truck without wrapping it in a blanket first. I just wouldn't want it to get it all scratched up. But That's kind of what I'm thinking. Maybe I should build another one that doesn't look so pretty. That way, if I do this somewhere, that's the one that gets beat up and not.
That's what you just want one for show, just one for just so you look at it.
Yeah.
Trophy one, not your trophy.
I thought the same. It's definitely babied more than it should be, but it's, you know, there's a lot of, when you build one, you put your time into it. You want to take care of your stuff. So yeah, for me, it's, I even like waxed it the other day because I was in the garage and I was working on it and I was like, this is ridiculous. But here I was, you know, I was bored, you know, in the garage. I was like, oh, I'll just hit it with a quick wax, but it's totally not needed for sure.
Now, are you charcoal or lump? Which one do you like?
So I go back and forth. And then the reason is, I love briquette in the Gravity series because I don't have any problem with what they call bridging. So a lot of times you get, you know, it burns out below it and the lump kind of sticks and then it doesn't fall to burn. So you have an issue with consistent cook temperature. Right. So I have a lot of charcoal on hands. I also can find pretty good, decent charcoal on, you know, around here. I've used lump lately and I find that lump is, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's cleaner in a sense, like as far as like ash content, ashiness and that sort of thing, especially in the Gravity series when you're blowing fans on stuff. Right. But you do run into the with the Gravity series anyway, you run that. With the Super 55, I've done a mixture. I feel like I get much longer cook time with just straight charcoal briquettes or overall time. And I've done like tests where I just ran the thing until it went out. But that's not to say you couldn't do like a full brisket cook on full long. The way that thing is set up,
it's just a good video with briquettes to see how long of a burn can, because I know Rank's got the one that they'll run about 19 hours on some lump. I'd like to see how long, just to see.
So I set mine up exactly how Frank describes, you know, with the, you know, finger and all the on the heat shield and the finger in the vents. And I don't know if it's like I don't think Missouri is a different altitude level than Champaign. But I have to open up my vents a little more and I have to open up my heat shield a little more to keep like a higher temperature. And that might just be how I'm setting something up or I've done something funky. Who knows? I don't know what I did differently, but I've noticed I opened up my heat shield up a little more to get a little more temp in there. So that might be contributing to my burn time, you know, cause if you're not, you know, keeping a nice consistent insulated burn, you're going to burn faster. But for me, I still get, I mean, I can go all night, absolutely all night, all morning. And so it's not like a concern.
Yeah.
There's very few times where I'm like, God, I need to add some charcoal, but that's pretty simple to do.
Yeah, I was noticing the same thing. I actually had to open my vents all the way, all the middle ones, the outside ones, and I have them to an inch now open, and I measured it, so they're an inch open. And I did some tests this weekend. Without the shield, I can set the drum at 300, lock it in at 300 without the heat shield, and then I'll throw the heat shield on there, and as soon as within like 5 minutes it drops down to 225 the temperature, and then I've like moved the shield around, like I flipped it upside down to see if upside down makes a difference versus with the vents up or down. It didn't make a difference whatsoever. I even spaced it out. I was thinking, okay, well maybe if you space it up above the you know, the, can't even think, the heat,
the heat shield. Yeah.
Some bricks on each side, and it was about 4-inch gap. And then I put the diffuser plate back on, and honestly, it didn't even make a difference with that 4-inch gap in between there. I was thinking it was going to let it, you know, the heat escape through around it a little bit more, but it didn't seem like it made a difference. So I kind of ran those tests this weekend to see if I could change the temperature whatsoever. And then as soon as I would take it off, it would go back to 300 and lock in at 300. So
what's your, where are you located? Like, what's your ambient temperature right now?
Well, this weekend, I think it was around 60, 65 degrees.
Okay.
That weekend when I was doing it, I think we're roughly a little over 200. I think we're like 220 feet above sea level where my house is. So But I don't know exactly. I mean, obviously the sea level makes a difference where you're at, but the way I'm situated, the houses, I have like a air always blows through the houses. So regardless whether it's windy or not, there's always wind that gusts through. So there's always like a lot of wind. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but I know I usually feel like I have more wind than most people.
That's definitely a factor, right? I mean, wind is gonna change how the air moves through that thing. I think my problem is that I'm in much colder climate, right? So when I've been using that, and then last few weeks have been frigid here in Illinois. So I think the reason I've had to open up the vents more is just it's thick, heavy, cold air, and it's also 25 degrees out, right? So the drum really has to breathe to get up to temperature. You're not running an insulated overall drum, right? The drum holds heat, but it's not an insulated canister. We're just now getting into the 40s. So I think my experience so far with the Super 55 has been pretty much all cold weather cooks. So I can't wait to try it out for the summertime. But it's interesting you're getting that, because you're at a sea level where you're basically at sea level. 200 feet's not going to do much. Even here in Illinois, I think we're at 600-700, something like that. So, I think the colder weather, it's obviously thermodynamics, you know, heavier, colder air, right? So it's gonna change the way it breathes.
I don't know. You see the chat, Richard? I know, but the paint for Rob.
I'm sorry.
With Rob, yeah.
See the chat. Rob said, I have my Super 55 for a year, no blistering paint, but doing competition barbecue and catering cooks. The paint looks a little tired, kind of like me. burns more efficiently than my four. I guess that's Draftmaster's old temp well.
Yeah. I've no complaints, right? It's just, it's different. And I've spent a lot of time with Gravity Series stuff, and getting into the drum has been a welcome change, just because the flavor is just fantastic. And then the speed at which you can do things is just.
I've actually, most of my last 2 years of cooking has been on drums. I've been doing Oklahoma Bronco and then the Pit Barrel. And now I have this. So I've been cooking on drums for the last 2 years quite a bit. And I really enjoy it. And they're all a little different, but honestly, once you figure them out, they're pretty close, once you set them to the temp you want, they cook pretty much the same. Obviously, yeah. there's some things that are better on one than the other. So
are there, just for my own question to you guys, is do you ever cook without the heat shield in most cases or in any case?
Actually, the Pit Barrel don't have one. I've cooked with my Super 55 without it. And it cooks just the same as the Pit Barrel. Honestly, I feel like you get a little bit more, I don't want to say flavor, but I kind of feel that you get a little bit more flavor off the grease
dripping
off the fire. You can do with or without, because I've actually cooked both ways already.
Okay. Yeah, it's something I want to try for sure.
Talked with Dale Fort, which, you know, he does competitions and stuff. He cooked for Frank at the Royal. He cooks without the shield, he said. That's the way he likes it, he said. So, I mean, I guess.
Feel too that without it, you can get those higher temperatures if you want to really cook hotter. And with the diverter plate on there, I think is way better for smoking, like at a lower temp.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I gotta give more effort into and try it with and without, because I've been curious to. You see all the other different brands out there, and a lot of them don't offer a diffuser. Not that it's right or wrong, but I've always thought, well, if this one's the Super 55 is designed with that, obviously it's a nice addition and it's a efficiency thing in most cases. But it does run great with it, so I've never thought to do like ribs in it hanging. I feel like you almost have to have it off.
You do have to rotate the spin the grate, it seems like, more often. Yeah. And then you do have to be careful, because it's only happened once to me, but it's happened to where I didn't rotate, and the grease actually put the fire out. It choked it out. So you gotta, you know, occasionally rotate the grate so it's not dripping in the same spot, the grease constantly, because I've had it gone out at least one time. But that's really, I guess, just, you know, I've cooked so much on the other ones that you kind of get used to doing that. So it's almost like I want to do it on this one. And you really don't have to, but I kind of, it's like a bad habit or a habit that you get into, spinning the grate every 30 minutes or 45 minutes, just to make sure that it's getting cooked evenly and stuff like that. So it's just kind of a habit you kind of get into. And then I was telling Ashley too, that I know on the Super 55, you can leave the lid open a lot longer and it won't spike up. But I'm so used to like getting everything ready, opening the lid, do what I got to do, and then shut it real quick so it doesn't spike up on the other, like on the other drums. So you kind of, you already prepared to do it. So I don't really notice the benefits off of it so much now, because I'm already kind of, you know, trained to do like the flip the meat, close the lid real quick, or don't leave the lid open and stuff like that. So
I could see that. Yeah, I'll definitely play with that. I've seen tons of drum in the competition world, and not that I ever intend to get in the competition barbecue, but it does sound like an exciting time. It's definitely a hobby I can't afford right now with everything else I do.
Because Rob just wrote in, he said several things that make the drums better for competitions: the mobility factor, and of course the consistent temps. I have used with and without the heat shield, and you get a hotter temp without the shield and possibility of flare-ups. You have to keep a closer eye on your cook.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Smoker Builder Podcast, and stay tuned for more episodes.